Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM. Good morning. So my next guest is from an ordinary Irish home in an ordinary Irish town, but it was through a number of life-changing events that led him to dedicate the rest of his time on earth to the practice and teaching of meditation. His new book called This Is It is a brutally honest memoir and sometimes humorous guide to meditation. And he's with me now. Conor Creighton, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Lovely to hear from you.
It's great to have you on. Now, can you tell me a bit about your own upbringing? I mean, it wasn't a hotbed of meditation, was it?
It was, you could say it was probably a great primer, you know, a great foundation for meditation. Yeah, we grew up in Kildare in a little village. Suppose like my parents were quite young. There was a little bit of an alcohol problem in the house, and then I was a very sensitive little ginger who got bullied, and all of these things sort of combined till I was about 17, and then I ran away from Kildare vowing never to come back again. And that's more or less the beginning for me.
Now, you talk about chronic anxiety being a big problem for you. In your teens and 20s, where you could only see the negative side of things, how did this manifest itself?
I think that I was just full of fear. Mm. Absolutely everything just scared me senseless. And it manifested in, say, ways where I had like an eating disorder for a while. And I can look back on this now with a certain sense of like humor at it all. Like I lived in the south of Italy where I had an eating disorder for a while. And I think that's kind of, it's a little bit like perhaps, I don't know, living in the Caribbean and having an allergy to salt water.
So it felt
very unfair to be like in the birthplace of communal eating and good food, and I was like, God, I can't put anything in my mouth here.
If you also talk about the death of your best friend when you were 21, that's so young. You talk about being a pivotal moment life. So you were struggling, you know, with negativity and fear, you just said. But can you tell me about that moment, that pivotal moment?
Yeah, an amazing friend of mine, Kevin. We were very close, and just a beautiful, kind, well-natured young guy who had a mohawk and a safety pin through his nose and had a rough time as a result. Mm. You know what I mean? Was very different, dyed his hair green, was a vegan, when even being a vegetarian was very radical, and was very sensitive. Too, and I remember us being in a bar on Suffolk Street, just talking about how depressed we were. Two young lads talking about how depressed we were, but not really having the language or the tools to help each other. So it was our kind of response to each other was just, "Sure, what can you do? We have another pint."
Yeah.
And I remember that night we both went our separate ways. Like he went home to Rathmines and I went home to Ranelagh where I was living. And I found out 2 days later that he drowned himself. And it really, what I think it did for me is it snapped me out of any suicidal thoughts that I had. And also sort of set me on a path, I think, towards just like discovery. And from that point on, I mean, it took me a hell of a long time, but I was determined. I was like, okay, I'm going to do what I want in this life. Mm. And in order to try and be happy.
Was that when you set off on a bit of an adventure? You took off into the world.
Yeah.
One of which you were a war reporter in Afghanistan. I mean, adventurous, yes, but dangerous, but pretty intense, I would suspect.
Yes. Do you know something? A very weird combination of mundane and then a very, very intense. So I worked for Vice magazine, and they have a film unit called VBS. Mm-hmm. And so mate was a reporter and then almost volunteered to go to Afghanistan and was one of the first sort of the Vice reporters to ever go there. And we went on a tiny budget and we're basically chasing the Taliban. and suicide bombings, and what we would hear coming through on the World Service about different attacks, or underground sources would tell us, oh, there might be an attack here. Myself and the photographer I was working with, we'd just get in a taxi and go there, and kind of in wearing flak jackets and sometimes helmets, and try and report on this. So I think at that stage in my life, I had imagined that I would get some sort of sense of satisfaction from making it, like being a difference in the world, you know, reporting on a war. But I kind of quickly realized that it was all very much ego driven. You know, it was sort of thrill seeking for me. And it was thrill seeking sort of wrapped up in this idea of some sort of nobility that I thought was connected to being a war reporter. But after that, I decided that I would never do anything like that again.
Because you're not drinking pints in Suffolk Street talking about how depressed you are. You're, you know, reporting on a war in Afghanistan, but you still have to go home and close that door, and you're still with yourself, which is probably what you have to deal with, right? Is it true? Yeah. Is it true that you had a job writing about your experience of taking various psychedelic drugs? Is that true?
Yeah, I used to work for Playboy as well, and I was a psychedelics correspondent. So that would mean I would, you know, do various different psychedelic ceremonies like ayahuasca, iboga, mescaline, peyote, and things like this. I would take them, and then I would write about the experience. What was interesting is it was sort of, I've always used journalism as a kind of a smokescreen for doing my own work on myself. And what's interesting too is kind of like the very first time I ever went on a meditation retreat, I said, oh no, I'm just doing it for a story. It'll be really funny to write a story about being in silence. And I think this was like deep down, I was just afraid to be vulnerable and say, I need work. And with the psychedelics and all of that, I was really just looking for answers, but was afraid to just sort of say, hey, I'm a slightly broken male, and I'm trying to find some peace here. Instead, I just wrapped it all up in journalism. I was like, oh no, I'm going after the stories that nobody else will cover. But one of the things that I did recognize from psychedelics is that, yes, there's an awful lot. You can see an awful lot. And you get introduced to different aspects of yourself. But ultimately, like you said earlier, you still come home and you've opened that door and you're like, okay, I'm back in my home again. It's me.
Just me.
You know, after you come down from these things, it's like, well, what do I do now?
So let's talk about this path to meditation. You said there that you kind of hid behind the fact that you took a journalistic approach to meditation, but did you fall in love with it straight away? Did you find something in your first meditation class that scared you, that awoken you, that what happened?
I have always been so cynical. Like, I really think like I'm the biggest doubter out there. I need to see so much proof of things, which I think in some ways makes me a good meditation teacher, because I try and say that to my students too. I'm like, look, you really need to believe this in order for it to work for you. Like, don't just take my word for it. Really study this and examine it. But I know the very first time that I meditated, I think I was 33, and I had just broken up with a fiance, and I thought I was going to marry this person. We broke up. So much of my future happiness was invested in the idea that we would get married. And I was like, this is the answer. And we broke up, and I was just sitting in our home, and I had a panic attack, and I was lying on the floor. And I thought to myself, Connor, you're 33 and you can't even pick yourself up off the carpet. And I remembered that earlier in the day, I had got like this free, on my Facebook feed, there'd been a free kind of sign up for a trial to Headspace. And in that moment, I just clicked on the free trial. And there was an introductory meditation that lasted about 3 minutes long. And on that day, I think I listened to it about 60 times. Because inside those 3 minutes, each time I did the meditation, there was about a half second to 1 second where I felt okay. And that was enough for me to then go, okay, I want to build on this. This is something that I'm just doing with my own breath, with my own attention, and it's allowing me to heal, albeit in a tiny, tiny way. And that was kind of, that was enough to sort of propel me to then go and do like a long retreat. And then I went, I after that, I was like, okay, now I'm going to India. Then I went to California, and very much built on this, these milliseconds of peace that I felt in my very first meditation, and said, okay, I want to try and heal my entire life using this method.
And get better at meditation. You said something very important there. You said in the amount of time you had these few seconds where you were at peace with yourself. And that's the thing with meditation, isn't it? You mightn't, your brain might wander, but it'll come back. And, you know, and meditation, I suspect, is, because I haven't really tried it. Is it something you have to really practice to be good at?
So meditation is just like bringing your awareness to what's really going on. You may never get to, like, this is something that I think is a bit of a misconception about meditation, is that it's not often relaxing and it's not really that blissful, but it's a heavy dose of reality. And in this reality allows you then to transform the rest of your life.
That's good to hear, because I think a lot of people are put off if they're not, you know, can clear their mind for 15 minutes at least. They think,
I
oh,
can't
this
clear my mind.
Good, that's so good to hear.
I've been doing this for the best part of a decade, and I mean, my mind clears, but very infrequently. A lot of the time it's just thinking and managing those thoughts.
So, Connor, why do you think we all find it so hard to sit in silence?
It's because we find our relationship with ourselves is slightly dysfunctional. If you notice this, we are programmed, we're socialized, we're conditioned from the youngest of age to prioritize other people. We find it very hard to say complimentary things about ourselves. We find it hard. We find it kind of icky sometimes. You know, when people say self-love and they're like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know, or even to express love for yourself, to talk about the wonderful things in yourselves. We there's a kind of a revulsion that we have. We run away from this. And this is very much societal. And this is why it can be so hard for us to just sit in silence with ourselves. Because when we sit in silence with ourselves, we start to feel uncomfortable. We start to recognize, hold on, maybe I haven't been very true to myself. Maybe I haven't been very kind to myself. This is why we're so addicted to distractions, because the distractions keep us away from the uncomfortable truth about our relationship with ourselves. But then the problems happen, these problems manifest at nighttime where you can't fall asleep because you've spent the whole day distracting yourself from yourself. And then you go to bed and then the thoughts emerge and they're like, well, hold on, you can't escape us here. So a meditation for me really is just a method that we can get to know ourselves and then love ourselves and then really be on our own sides. So often, like, you meet people, and myself included, I'm not saying that I'm anyway different, where we just, we don't back ourselves.
Of course we don't. We're Irish.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Connor.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Don't be crazy.
Yeah,
that's totally crazy talk.
Yeah, right. And this is also, this is the beauty of also teaching this in Ireland, because I think I love it, like, when we do these big group meditations together and when I work with groups, because we have, I mean, spirituality and self-love, these are our birthrights. I think the effect of religion on our Ireland has kind of made spirituality a bit of an icky thing. But spirituality is just sort of the exploration of how it is to be human and the mystery that is our life. And being somehow ashamed of this and being ashamed of our relationship with ourselves, I think, is one of the horrible legacies of the Catholic Church. And I love that so much of, like, the meditation work that I've seen has really brought people back into, like, spiritual community with each other. And at a very just kind of a normal, non-religious way.
The book is called This Is It. Is that a message, like, we all need to engage with it a lot more, that life, you know, isn't a dress rehearsal?
Yeah, it's true. It's like, I don't know, I was just on the phone the other night with my grandmother, and she's in a nursing home. She's 97. and we're just chatting. Do you know what I mean? And she always seems to, like, her message always to me is like, you know, you don't have that much time. Take it from me as an older person who's kind of reaching the end of their cycle. Like, you don't have that much time. And so many of us, we live these lives on autopilot. By autopilot, I mean we're not really connecting with what's true inside ourselves. We're doing what we think will please others. We're listening to other projections of others and what we learned in school, what a good boy does, what a good girl does. And yet we're maybe never really connecting until the very end to what our true purpose is in life. I mean, as the great teacher Thich Nhat Hanh used to say, you didn't come here to suffer. Yeah, but so many of us just suffer through this life. And meditation really teaches you ways to, first off, recognize that suffering and then understand how you're possibly bringing some of that suffering into your own life and then heal yourself through self-love and compassion, which can sound a little icky to some people too, but this is the beauty of it.
Well, listen, Connor, I think we leave it at that. It's been a real pleasure, I have to say, talking to you today. I mean, there's so much in your book that I think we can all learn from. I just want to wish you the very best of luck with everything in the future. And hopefully you'll come back on the show again.
It would be my pleasure.
I would love that. And just to you guys out there, if you like the sound of all of that, Connor's new book, This Is It, is published by Gill Books and is out now. We'll be back right after these.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.